This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Where did people get the money to boost incomes last month? I'm David Brancaccio. Good morning. One piece of news in the race to develop a COVID-19 vaccine. Investors have purchased bonds to lend $500 million to fund vaccine programs in developing countries. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab is here with more. Kristen, what's behind this bond?
The money was raised by the International Finance Facility for Immunization. It's an organization that specializes in this, selling bonds to invest in global health. And the money was raised for Gavi, a UN-backed alliance that funds programs that increase vaccine access in developing countries.
Kind of a teachable moment about what we call a social bond.
Yeah, social bonds have become really popular since the start of the pandemic. They help fund projects for everything from food security to healthcare, and they work like any other bond, but allow investors to put money towards a good cause by front-loading cash and hoping for a market return.
Because distribution of the vaccine globally is going to be expensive, and public health experts say the only way to beat the pandemic is for the vaccine to get everywhere.
Yeah, after a vaccine is developed, global health organizations estimate it'll cost at least $20 billion to get it to everyone in the world. It's especially difficult and expensive to distribute vaccines in developing countries. The COVID-19 vaccine could include multiple rounds or require temperature control, which make for huge logistical hurdles in these rural areas. And it's assumed that the country that develops a vaccine will prioritize immunization in that country. Funding a project like this could help level the playing field when it comes to access. And if we zoom out a bit more, global vaccine distribution is necessary to reopen borders and get the world up and running again.
Kristen, thank you. Americans spent 1.4% more in September than a month earlier, driven in part by incomes that went up by 0.9% that same month. Those are not big moves upward, and a sign the economy remains in a weakened state. That said, it's striking that incomes went up last month with more than 20 million people unemployed. Riddle me this. Christopher Lowe is the chief economist at FHN Financial. Good morning.
Good morning, David.
So we get this data that our income is up in September, not quite 1%, yet the pandemic special benefits from the summer had pretty much run out. Where were people getting the money?
The pandemic special benefits disappeared, and as a result, unemployment insurance payments fell by $266 billion. That, by the way, is a 42% decline. FEMA payments, called lost wages supplemental.
Right. When President Trump unilaterally moved ahead with the $300 payments, that's what this is, via the Federal Emergency Management Agency.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, the thing is, it won't last forever. There was a limited amount of funds. So it was enough to carry income growth in September. And in fact, that 1% increase is a reflection of wage and salary income growth, small business income growth, as the economy came back. And it offset that loss for 1 month.
And you're generally worried about the fall here, right?
Economists inside the Fed, outside the Fed, have been warning that Congress and the White House were taking a big risk not reaching some kind of agreement on extending benefits. I expect the economy is going to slow down quite hard in the fourth quarter, given the fact that we have already gone more than a month without assistance.
Chris Lowe, chief economist at FHN Financial in New York. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Looking through Amazon's 37% sales growth it reported for its most recent quarter, there's this detail in there. Amazon saved $1 billion in travel expenses because its people are not traveling much during pandemic. $1,000,000,000,000,000,000. And that's good for Amazon, but we also have data on the flip side. The World Travel and Tourism Council said just now it expects its industry to lose 174 million jobs around the world if coronavirus restrictions stay in place.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
In the years that followed the Bush versus Gore election recount mess 20 years ago, there was federal money and pressure to be sure that local jurisdictions used paper ballots, which could be stored and recounted if election machinery failed. Paper, and there was no great impulse to move to voting through the internet over concern about hacking and equal access. Machines and voting go back to the 1890s. As part of our series, The Business of Voting, a closer look at election infrastructure, let's turn to someone who's followed the history. Charles Stewart is a political science professor at MIT and founder of its Election Data and Science Lab. Welcome.
Oh, my pleasure to be here.
I was surprised to see the first voting machines really go back to the late 19th century. You've been doing it that long?
Oh, yeah. No, they arose in the late 19th century. You know, there are periods in American history where technology is all the rage. And I think the rush to automate industry caught the idea of reformers. So we got automation in voting about 150 years ago.
And some of this was, you know, the idea of modernity, but also some of this was they thought those machines might help mitigate fraud at some level.
Oh, absolutely. The things were big beasts. You know, they weighed 800 pounds. So, you know, you're not going to easily steal them. It also made it easier for cities to have more voting sites. One of the problems in the 1890s and 80s was that voting sites were so crowded. And automation facilitated kind of distributing out the voting so that the precincts were smaller, easier to control in terms of the crowd. And so the machines were actually, I mean, I think rightfully so, seen as bringing a bit of kind of business practices and a bit of kind of greater control and honesty in the vote counting process.
Now, in our current generation, we're faced with this, I guess it's almost a paradox, right? In a world that's getting rid of paper and embracing information on screens, the move for America's voting system has really been back to paper and ink, and it's on purpose, right?
Oh, it has been. And it's very interesting as somebody who, you know, has gotten into the history of technology by looking at voting machines. You know, we're not as worried as we once were with crowds overwhelming a precinct and stealing the ballot box, for instance. We're much more aware of ways in which computerized equipment can break down. We're concerned with hacking and the rest. And so, you know, now among kind of experts in the field, there's greater interest in going back to paper, at least for the marking of the ballots. We're still tabulating using automation, in this case computers, but we have much better record now of what a voter intended to do in the event the equipment breaks down.
Charles Stewart is a professor of poli-sci at MIT and founder of MIT's Election Data and Science Lab. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
In the series, we also talked today to the head of a tech nonprofit in California that's trying to make voting equipment cheaper and to build in systems to quickly do quality control audits to be sure the counting was right. Marketplace.org, if you missed that on the air. I'm David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.